Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk.
This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And good morning, Rutherford County. This is the Greg Tucker Show, and I will be assisting him today. And this part of his show, I do the commercials, is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means At Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care provides top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. You can reach them at 713-4639 or online at homecaretennessee.com. That's 713-4639. Well, Greg, you just told me something I didn't realize, that Mr. Myers Parson went on a cruise.
Well, he went on a cruise in the Caribbean, and we saw yesterday where one of the big carnival cruises is down, and they've been sitting there unable to turn on the light or flush the toilet. Electric problems, apparently. And
he's going to get some extra days if he's on that one then.
Well, I guess I should say I hope that's not the one he's on. But on the other hand, wouldn't it be a great story if that is?
I'd love to have, we could have him on the show.
Bring him on, let him talk about his experiences. Yeah. But yeah, a grand old fella, and he was telling us about going, and we said, well, what islands are you going to? And he says, I don't care, I don't ever get off the boat. He says, I just sit there by the pool and watch the scenery. Some more power to him. I hope the scenery's been good for him.
You know, you should have been at the Old Timers baseball last night. You talk about history. I mean, it was all there. And we went back to John Stanford's time in baseball, and then Pete Peterson, and then we come all the way up to Jim McGuire. And it was such a great night, and I think everybody had a good time. It brought back a lot of memories for all the old folks last night, and you should have been there.
Memories of when, in my opinion, a much healthier distraction and recreation entertainment than playing video games. I have heard so many people tell me about how important the baseball activity and the competition between the communities was back decades ago.
It was a strength of the communities at one time. The competition was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I believe there's something in the order of a Rutherford County Baseball Hall of Fame, isn't there?
Yeah.
I heard that somebody documents some of the stories of the early greats of our own series.
and everybody always says that we build those stories up really more than what they should be, but it's not true. Actually, we were really better than the stories, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, I appreciate that point. Even though the stories themselves seem better,
yes,
over time, mm-hmm. but they haven't really reached the level of reality yet.
We're not a good storyteller like you. I mean, you can take something and build it up into an epic. You really can.
Well, I've been a little confused last couple of days. It's not spring yet, is it?
No, it's not.
I picked a bouquet of flowers out of the yard yesterday for my wife.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah.
And I can't imagine what they were.
It looked like all the yellow flowers mm-hmm. are in bloom.
What do you call those, buttercups?
Daffodils. Daffodils. Yeah. But the ones I picked, in fact, some of your listeners may be able to give me a little more information. Some bulbs given to me by an elderly cousin years and years ago. She called it butter and eggs, and the plant and the bud and all looks just like a daffodil. But when it opens up, it looks more like a small chrysanthemum, kind of a yellow and white mix. And we've just got this one little spot where they come up and butter and eggs. Mm-hmm. And it's really not an impressive bloom at all, but it's odd. So that's the one in particular that I made the bouquet out of.
And so your wife got those for you?
No, I picked them for her.
I misunderstood.
Yeah.
All right. You believe it or not, I was listening to you on the radio show, and you weren't on my show, which kind of, I guess you're out trying other areas.
Yeah, Brian bribed me into that.
But you were talking about something interesting. When we think of Smyrna and the war, we think of Sam Davis.
Boy, hero of the Confederacy.
Yes, yes. He's first in mind. But you were talking about another gentleman that he really paid the price.
Well, yeah, and I think there's something, it's a good illustration when you compare those two of one of the realities of history, be it local history or otherwise. Let's back up a little bit. Sam Davis is remembered for his role with what was called the Coleman Scouts. Mm-hmm. This was essentially the spy corps for General Bragg in the Army of Tennessee. And as Bragg retreated and moved south, the Coleman Scouts, and it's interesting, the Coleman name was fictitious. Henry Shaw was actually the head of the Scouts, and he took the name Coleman to, you know, aid him in keeping his real identity secret. And all of them worked primarily in secret. But they were recruited from, I remember the details, they had to be no more than mid-20s. They were supposed to not be married or have any family dependents. Of course, they had parents, but no married, no children, anything like that. So they would not be, reserved about the risk they were going to have to take. They had to be excellent horsemen. And importantly, they had to know the terrain and the people and the communities in the Middle Tennessee area, primarily the Northern Middle Tennessee, because they worked behind the lines of the Northern Army, mm-hmm. gathering information. And then the challenge was to get over to the, the Confederate Army. Sam Davis was doing this work and was captured, and he actually was caught kind of red-handed because in his saddlebags he had some documents that reflected the Yankee positions and the Yankee movement. Mm-hmm. So it was clear to his captors that he was spying and relaying information. He was caught down near Pulaski where there was a Yankee headquarters, and as we all know the story, a spy on either side, mm-hmm. if captured, was subject to execution. And the senior officers offered him, essentially, you could go home, we'll give you a horse, you know, and just tell us who your contacts are. Mm-hmm. And his famous line that he would never betray a friend, would rather give up his life than betray a friend. Mm-hmm. And he was, according to the protocols of the military, executed by hanging. And you could say he died with honor, died with dignity,
yes.
and died as a hero for his commitment to the cause and also his unwillingness to betray others. DeWitt Job, J-O-B-E, was from Mechanicsville, which has disappeared, but Rocky Fork, our Rocky Fork community, is about the same place. And a prominent family like Sam Davis, although different. Sam Davis's family were primarily farmers, plantation owners. Mm-hmm. Job's family, his father Elihu, was a cabinet maker, a furniture maker, and also a metalsmith. Mm-hmm. And at least one source suggests that the name Mechanicsville was named for his operation. He employed a number of people, made plow points and furniture and such. So they both came from families of some means and well-known in the community. Job, just like Sam Davis, same kind of detail, working under the same circumstances. And he usually slept during the day and rode at night. he was in possession of some information. And it's interesting when you read the two stories, it almost sounds like they were using the same source. And the kind of a romantic hint that Sam Davis and this source were romantically linked. Mm-hmm. But there was a woman who was working in, who was serving in Nashville, serving the Confederacy, and she had access to information that was of use. And it's possible that Job and Davis were protecting in part the same person as their source. But Job was caught literally asleep during the day in a field, and he was captured by a contingent of enlisted personnel under a sergeant. And as he was literally in the process of being captured, he took some papers and chewed them up to destroy them where they couldn't be used or recognized. And his captor said, you got to tell us what that information was and who you got it from. And just like Sam Davis, he refused to disclose his source. He was not, however, subjected to execution according to the protocols of the army. He was tortured, and probably over an extended period of time. When the body was finally recovered, one report written by Bromfield Ridley says the eyes had been gouged out, the tongue had been cut out. He had been apparently hung several times to the point of death and then dropped. One account says ultimately he was hitched behind a horse and drugged to his death. Whatever happened to him, it was a, you know, a horrible experience.
Was there any ruse of capture at that time?
The group that captured him was not obviously bound by any conventions of war or any protocols.
There were no officers there?
No officers. The senior there was a sergeant. Some of those either that were involved in the torture, and this was, you could only call a murder under the circumstances. They had gone through the same, you know, promises of release and decent treatment if he would reveal his source, and he refused to. And in the course of the torture, according to some accounts, you know, he would be given, you know, we're going to do this next to you if you don't, and he refused. And one account even suggests that his refusals were rather aggressive in his description of his captors and what he thought of them and such. In any event, he paid the price, as Sam Davis did, and was loyal to, you know, the cause and loyal to those he worked with and protected them, just as Sam Davis had. We have two statues in Tennessee to Sam Davis. His home is a landmark and a tourist attraction, and it's part of the state tourism. There is one marker for Job, and details what we've been describing. Why the difference? Why the difference in treatment? Sam Davis had what I call a Boswell. Boswell is an English literary figure who wrote the what came to be kind of the pattern for biographies, the earliest biography. He wrote a biography of Samuel Johnson, who was a, perhaps you could say, a minor figure. He wrote one of the first dictionaries, but it was the first biography that was kind of a warts and all biography and set the style for literature. And his last name was Boswell. So when I say Sam Davis had a Boswell, he had someone who brought home his story and documented the story. And so his name was Kennedy. And he was actually a Yankee collaborator. He'd come down here with the occupying army. His family were friends with the general who was in charge of the occupying forces in Nashville. But he obviously was a man with a heart, and he saw a family that had heard stories of their son being executed, and they came to him for help, and he agreed to help. He went to Nashville. He got permission from the occupying general to travel through the army's lines and retrieve the body. When he got to Pulaski, he heard the stories firsthand from the senior officers and the others who had been present for the execution of Sam Davis. He brought the body home. He told the story to the family. It didn't end there. He apparently repeated the story many times, emphasizing the respect and deference that the Yankee captors had for Sam Davis. A few years after the war, he wrote up the entire story as he knew it. It was published in Confederate Veteran and other sources. He organized the fundraising campaign that led to the statues being erected on the Capitol grounds. Mm-hmm. As you know, on the corner of the Capitol is a statue to the boy hero of the Confederacy, Sam Davis. And I read several accounts written personally by Kennedy. And when the statue was being done, he was brought in to see the original mold for the statue and to confirm that it looked like Sam Davis as he remembered him. Kennedy was the Boswell for Sam Davis, and the story, we should all appreciate, the story was told and documented, and we recognize the boy hero of the Confederacy.
And he died under honor, grace.
Right.
You didn't have a whole lot of grisly things going on like it did with Joe.
His body.
Joe, I mean, what he suffered during that is almost unreal. It's just something that you can't comprehend.
Yeah, well, even when Davis's body was recovered, it was essentially lying in state. It had been laid out. Mm-hmm. The hood was still, he was still hooded as he had been. When Job's body was recovered, a slave, one of his father's slaves, mm-hmm. who had the same last name, Frank Job, found the body, and I've read several accounts. One is it was hanging in a tree, one had been thrown in a sinkhole, and one it was just laying out in the field, left out in the sun in the field, when his body was recovered. And Job didn't have a Boswell. He didn't have someone who brought the story home and told the story.
Would most of the information that came from what occurred during that event been from the Northern soldiers themselves? Because they would have been the only ones that would have been there.
And the an interesting part of the story is apparently some of the soldiers that were involved either told others or had some remorse, because the family learned from the Yankee soldiers. Several of the accounts and the accounts that I have read are all after the fact, written by usually family members who are repeating what they were told and what they heard. And but apparently a couple of the Yankee soldiers went to the home and told them what had happened and where the body was, and only then did they go to recover the body. So
I guess there would have been no reprisals for the sergeant or whoever was over that group.
No. In fact, one account, the one by Ridley, said that the sergeant was so remorseful in his later years that he went insane.
Sounded like he was at that time.
It probably was at that time, but there's no truth to that. John Moore found for me the death certificate for the sergeant. Mm-hmm. He lived to be 75 years old. He was a very successful farmer in Ohio after the war, and although perhaps we would never know, troubled by what had happened, it certainly is not true that he went insane or anything like that. He apparently went back to his previous life and prospered. So
even during wartime, that's extraordinarily cruel. I mean, you just can't even comprehend a human being doing that to someone else, even during that type of situation. Mm-hmm. So it's so. But what he endured, Job endured during that time, there should be something to commemorate, you know, the bravery and his loyalty at the time to the cause, whatever, that he was fighting for at the time.
Representative Mike Sparks has told me that he's personally going to make an effort to see if there can't be more in the way of recognition of the contribution of Job. But he is North Rutherford County, another Smyrna hero, I guess. I want to take just a minute to express a little appreciation, and I hope they're listening. Butch, Janie Campbell, I understand they found an old scrapbook in their attic, and they don't really know the source of it. The name written in it is Buford Brown, and it looks like it was possibly a school project on Murfreesboro history. And they sent it in to Truman to pass along to me, and I really appreciate that. It is, in a little bit rough shape, but I can make out what's there. And this is one of the best sources. People who in the past, years ago, started collecting information. One of our best sources of local history. And I've actually seen and gotten several scrapbooks where people, apparently it was a popular hobby at one time, would clip articles from newspapers and magazines and collect items from events and put them in personal scrapbooks. And they're a tremendous source. And to Butch and Janie, I appreciate it. And if there are any others out there that have something in the way of an old scrapbook that you can't quite decide what to do with, let me know. And we'll eventually probably put it either in the archives or in the Historic Society offices so others can use them as well.
I want to thank Butch and Janie for giving Jackie and I a ride the other day at the Groundhog Day. I mean, it was a bad weather, but they took us to our car, and they're such sweet people. They really are. Just love them to death. That's part of old Murfreesboro. Now, another part of old Murfreesboro, we were talking about something that is very interesting, and I know we're going to have to take a break, but we're going to get back to that story in a minute about a kind of a mystery killing. And it has to do with gambling and things like that. So we'll be right back with you with, it's Greg Tucker's show. He should be saying that.
We'll be right back.
Thank you.
With Truman Jones.
Thank you.
Okay. Honey, have you seen my keys?
On the hook, dear.
Okay, what about my phone?
I'm calling it now.
Oh, it's in my coat. Okay, all right.
Don't forget your briefcase.
Oh! Yeah. Okay, where is it?
It's by the door.
Oh, got it. Have you seen my keys? Oh, right. Yep, okay. Okay, I'm off. I'll see ya.
1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000, 5-1000.
Hey, honey, I'm home.
With a new Win for Life instant game from the Tennessee Lottery, your only job might be going to the mailbox and collecting $3,000 a week for life. The new Win for Life instant game, only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing, life-changing fun.
So, how was your day?
Oh, you know, the usual.
The Rutherford County School Resource Officer Division proudly announces its 8th annual rodeo, being held at Miller Coliseum on Thompson Lane, Murfreesboro, March 1st and 2nd. Tickets are available through any school resource officer or call 904-3070.
Here's Frank LePetri, pastor of Holly Grove Baptist Church.
After high school, Darryl Blizzard left the orphanage where he grew up to join the U.S. Army Air Corps. World War II was in full swing. He told a reporter years later that a 4-mule plow team was the biggest thing he had ever driven before he became the pilot of a B-17. Now in his late 80s, he said, "We were all just kids flying those things." In the Bible, we find accounts of many people who followed God courageously when they were young. Samuel ministered before the Lord. Even as a child, David faced the giant Goliath in spite of being told, "You are not able to go against this Philistine. You're just a youth." This is Frank LePetri, the pastor of the Holly Grove Baptist Church. God values each one of his family. In his strength, the young can be bold in their faith, while those who are older can encourage those who are just kids.
Be sure to visit our website, hollygrovebaptist.com.
Holly Grove Baptist Church, reaching out to offer hope.
Hi, I'm Wade Hayes, owner of Toots, Good Food and Fun. I strongly believe that volunteers make a positive difference in the quality of life here in our community.
Bobby and Sue Copeland volunteer weekly at Room in the Inn. Bobby's health challenges never keep him from putting others first. Sue recently retired after 4 decades of teaching. She's a caregiver and also helps the homeless. This loving couple constantly go out of their way to uplift and encourage others.
At Toots, we strongly believe that it's important for every one of our citizens to give some of their time and talent back into the community. We've been so blessed here in Rutherford County, and we want to honor these individuals with a Toots gift certificate good at any of our 3 Rutherford County locations. Our original Toots on Northwest Broad Street, Sam Ridley Parkway in Smyrna, and our newest location at South Church Street and Barfield Road.
Always helping with Room in the Inn and so many other areas, Bobby and Sue Copeland, our Toots volunteers.
You had an accident and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? Affordable liability insurance from Safe Auto. For not a lot of money, you can protect yourself from your own mistakes. Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO now. Drive safe, spend less, Safe Auto.
Registration for the 2nd Annual Special Kids Race presented by MMC is now open. With a sold-out first-year event, mark your calendar for Saturday, March 23rd, 2013, and choose from one of 3 distances, the 1-mile fun run, the 5K, or the 15K. Registration is limited to 3,000 participants, so don't miss out on one of Murfreesboro's biggest races. With your help, Special Kids can reach even more children with special needs. Register today at specialkidsrace.org and run for the kids.
Weatherize.
Cloudy skies for the forecast area. Slight chance for showers this afternoon. Highs in the mid-50s with a light northeast wind around 5. Tonight, occasional rain showers and a low of 41. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Faluber.
Right now, 39.
Our WGNS birthday cake winner today, Kaylee Murray. She is age 9 and receives the birthday cake from Junior's Foodland. And congrats to our good neighbor of the day, dentist Dr. Carson Taylor. Someone says that he's always helpful to his patients, friends in the community as well. Dr. Taylor today receives flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts.
To bag the deer of a lifetime, you have to be prepared. That's why you need to shop Murfreesboro Outdoors.
This is Randy at Murfreesboro Outdoors. We got camouflage clothes, shotguns, shells.
Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad Street.
It's the Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back to the Greg Tucker Show, and it's brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. Now, we were talking earlier, Greg, about an event that I really don't remember, and I should, but it involves gambling and a particular incident that happened that has brought out a lot of mystery.
Well, it came to my attention because the family of one of the individuals critically involved contacted me. They were from out of the area now, but they had heard stories and never quite understood what had happened to, I believe it was a grandfather. As we've talked about several times, there was a lot of gambling activity in Rutherford County, Murfreesboro, back in the 30s, continuing on up for perhaps another couple of decades. And the individual that is involved, his name was Lillard Burnett. Some people pronounce it Burnett. I think his family advised me Burnett was their preferred. He was a stock trader and very active gambler at the time. And while he was literally loading stock, horses, I understand, onto a railroad car down in the old switch yard there, which would now be about where Hooper Supply and that area down there, he was shot. He was shot in the back. And he was a big fella, according to the descriptions, for that generation, very big, stood well over 6 feet, stocky. And the fellow that shot him was a very small, physically small. The fellow who shot him's name was Tuffy Victory. Tuffy, probably a nickname. And it was generally believed at the time that Victory had no grudge, no argument, or no differences with Burnett, but that he had been put up to it. And the likelihood was that Burnett had gotten at odds with some of the gambling activity. But that's all we know. Mm. And Tuffy was intellectually limited. It's a nice way of saying it. So he could easily have been influenced by someone. In fact, one in the family said that they had heard that Tuffy was told, you can be the man who killed the biggest man in Murfreesboro. He was put up to it. And Tuffy may well have served some time. I had some, but very limited. And Tuffy never named anyone or never spoke. So the question is, who was Tuffy identified with? What group or what interest or what individuals was he close to? And is there any evidence or any information about who might have put him up to that? Obviously, I'm just interested in the history. It's a long, long past any kind of prosecution or anything, but an interesting story. First, to think that these things happen in Murfreesboro, but also it would be, I think, informative to know just what the alliances, the friendships, the contacts, or perhaps even employment were back in that time. So, if there's any of our seniors or others out there who remember anything about this particular incident, I'd love to hear from you.
Now, what era are we talking about? What year?
Would have been the late 30s. The date that I was given was 1940, but I think it was sometime late 30s or early 40s.
Now, the late 30s, that was wide open time. I mean, there was a lot of gambling and bootlegging and all those things going on. But to be honest with you, I have... And you would probably know more about this, although it was part of my line of work for years, is I really don't ever remember a syndicate or a group of people being in power during that time. And I'm sure that they did have a number of people that were involved in gambling, as we know. There have been over long as I can remember. But it's usually been what we call social gambling. It's not the type that you would have people who would own large establishments and would be controlling the gambling and the bootlegging and all the things like that going on.
Well, obviously part of the risks of in those days and even now, bootlegging or gambling, activities that are not sanctioned legally, is if someone does get in debt, you can't go to the court to collect the debt because the debt is illegal or the result of illegal activity. And for that reason, there is always a risk of violence if someone gets at odds within an activity like that. We see that today. So many of our shootings and such are related to the drug trade. Same thing, if you've got a financial dispute, somebody welches on a debt or something like that, there's no appropriate way or legal way to enforce it.
I can remember times when there was violence going on around here. It just seems like it's the thing that's happening right now because the cartels have gotten so large and so violent. And in some ways, it's just as much a power struggle as it is anything. Now, you wrote something in the paper Sunday, and I have to apologize because I did not get a chance to read it this last Sunday. And you always have that big article before you come on my show, and I always read it, and this time I blew it.
Well, we were writing about the Civil War, and we're still observing the 150th anniversary. There's another word for it that's hard to say, but the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. People have shared with me usually family stories and such. And we had, I think there were three different stories we put together on that. The lead story came to my attention from, actually it was brought to my attention by Vaughn, Jack Vaughn. Mm-hmm. And what caught my eye was a reference to Gone with the Wind. Ooh. And the fact that Margaret Mitchell had identified as her best source of information on the reality and the circumstances and the life of the soldier in the Civil War, a particular set of memoirs written by a fellow who had been a private from Texas. But as I started flipping through it, I found that he had some very close connections to Rutherford County. His mother was a Rutherford County native, mm-hmm. last name Miller, Eliza mm-hmm. Miller. And his father had come here from North Carolina, but had lived here and apparently grew up here and married here, and then had taken his family to Louisiana first and on to Texas, in part trying to get away from the threat of war, protecting his family. His young teenage, early 20s son, however, as they do in those circumstances, joined up at the first opportunity and fought in many of the battles with a Texas contingent over in the eastern states, and ultimately was part of a group that was harassing Sherman as Sherman was going across Georgia. They were in the rear behind Sherman's army and harassing, and he got captured. And the story is that he was quickly loaded into a boxcar with a lot of other captives and was being shipped up to a prisoner of war camp up north. On his way through southern Rutherford County, best I can determine, somewhere between Fosterville and just north of there, Christiana, mm-hmm. he jumped from the train and survived the jump and had to make his way through the farm community down there at the time. And his only clothing was what he had salvaged from some of his captors. He was wearing a belt that had the U.S. emblem on the buckle, mm-hmm. which worked out nicely because the first place he went to, he knocked on the door of what looked like a quiet farmhouse. The door was open and there were three Yankee renegades in there, apparently hiding out from their own. And he immediately called them to attention and spoke like a commanding officer and ordered food for himself and his others that were hiding out in the field, mm-hmm. he said. And he got away from that. Then he encountered a farmer who, the minute, as he walked up, there was a lone farmer out working fence or something at the edge of his farm. And he thought, well, I better be honest with this one and just mm-hmm. tell him who I am and what I need. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he identified his circumstances, the farmer looks, you know, scared to death. Mm-hmm. And he said in his memoirs, he says, I realized that this fellow was scared to death, that he was going to be dealt with harshly by a stray rib. Mm-hmm. And so he said the farmer could hardly even talk to him. He was shaking so and so scared. So finally he said, you know, are there any Confederate rebel sympathizers in the area? And the farmer gestures up the road and finally gets out about a mile. So he heads on up the road, and sure enough, he finds a physician who has fled from Murfreesboro under occupation, and is out in the country with his family, and talking to the physician, who was very sympathetic, and they fed him and gave him some better clothing and even provided him ultimately with a mule. As he's talking to him, the physician says, he tells him about the farmer up the road, and the physician says, well, coincidentally, he has the same last name as you. Hmm. After the war, back home in Texas, he finds out that the fellow was his uncle.
Oh, my.
His father's older brother, who had remained in Rutherford County, last name Hudson, last name Fletcher. Mm-hmm. Fletcher.
What a great story.
Yeah, and he goes on, he takes the mule, and he heads south and east trying to catch up with his Texas contingent, mm-hmm. and stops at a farm down somewhere, probably Grundy County, Sequatchie, on that direction. And the farmer looks at the mule and says, I got a proposal. You give me that mule, and I'll help you steal a fine horse from my neighbor. And Fletcher writes as he was leaving, riding, he said, a fine three-year-old stallion. He said, I wonder who was the worst, the fellow who stole the horse or the neighbor who contrived to have his closest neighbor's horse stolen. He made it back to his Texas group and just in time to learn of the surrender of Lee. And he and some of his Texas brothers, they just got on their horses and went home. No parole, no oath of allegiance or anything. They just went home. And of course, back in Texas, Beaumont had not been touched much by the war. And so he said he went right back to the job that he left. He was working in a lumber mill. And the end of the story is, if you'll go to Beaumont now, you'll find that he was one of the most successful businessmen of that period. He was the first American to export lumber, big lumber operation down there. Hospitals, libraries, and such in the community were all funded by him. He continued to be something of a rebel, though. Even in his epitaph, he liked to kind of press the pious and challenge the conventional thinking.
Now, did he write his memoir?
He did.
Were they published?
In his later years, in the 1890s, he sat down and wrote out his personal account, and he apparently was a very, very intelligent fellow in detail with names and such of his full experiences. And it was found again in about the late 1930s. A copy had gotten to the Library of Congress, and then it became quite a sensation among Civil War historians, and I'm sure that's where Margaret Mitchell first learned of it. So it was published back around 1900 and then was generally forgotten and then rediscovered about 30 years later, about 25 years after he died. And I'm looking forward to talking to some of the millers from down around Christiana and see if we can identify Eliza. And
I can't wait till you dig into that.
Yeah, see more of her family.
You know, it's interesting that did she give credit to any of the things that he had published in her book itself? Because I can't remember.
I would have to read it again, knowing what he wrote, to see if I could find specific. But she, in interviews after the big success of her book, it gave a kind of a generous attribution to his work as her best source.
Well, of course, you've seen the movie, and I've seen the movie a number of times over the years. And it's not one of my favorite movies, and it's not that it, you know, that it didn't receive a lot of attention, which it did, but I thought it was kind of biased in some ways, and I'm not sure that Margaret Mitchell was happy with the way it turned out in film, because it distorted a lot of the people that were in it in an unfavorable way, and you probably know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I can't watch the movie anymore.
Well, today we're probably too overzealous the other direction with what we call political correctness, but the movie played on stereotypes.
Yes.
And that was a Hollywood style, I guess, of that era, and people expected it. And so, you know, they exaggerate the Southern women, they exaggerate the blacks, and you know,
so they exaggerate everybody in there when you get right down to it.
They did,
and it portrayed some to be weak and some to be strong, and you know, that's not the way life really was.
It was obviously not a happy ending, but I think at the time there were a lot of people, second and third generation, but really identified, you know, and felt the pain of the war and the impact it had on the South. Mm-hmm. And obviously the most dramatic change in this part of the country, this part of the world, as a result.
You know, when you go back to what was going on near the end of the war, and you were talking about the farmer was scared to death because he thought he may have been a rebel guy that's out to loot and kill. They were doing everything at that time just to stay alive. And what was happening is that the people who still had their property, their homes and things like that, they started to become more victims during that time than they were before.
Oh, yeah. You rarely read of it, but the looting by the Union forces, particularly, for instance, Sherman, just, during that period when he was tearing through Georgia, the looting and the destruction was criminal, really. But there was, at that time, no resistance. And some, I'm sure not all, but some of the leaders looked the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read accounts of just how much in the way of pocket watches and things like that went up north as the war wound down.
You always wondered if they had used the ruse of engagement like we have over the last couple of wars that we've had. We've always had in mind the people that were the victims there in those areas, and we've always tried to help them rebuild. And some of them, the worst situations that our soldiers faced, I mean, they were truly just victimized by the military when they were captured and things like that. But yet, we still have found a way to humanize everything and get people started back on their feet again, because, you know, more times than not, the civilians are victims in those particular. This, in the South being a war zone at that time, especially Tennessee and Virginia and Georgia, they're the ones that caught the brunt of most of the brutality, even though they were not involved in the war itself.
Tennessee in particular, Virginia I suspect even more so, but Tennessee was the scene of so much because everything had to go through Tennessee.
Right.
So, you know, the devastation, and we had in the later stages of the war, both armies living off the land. So, you know, it was in some part essential, and in some part the locals cooperated, but an awful lot of it was, you know, just burn and destroy and steal.
You know, it's amazing during that particular time, because it was just one of those wars where everybody was just assembled very quickly. The officers were named. It had to be some point of chaos going on during that time. But the officers seemed to be the ones that could maintain control, integrity. They still had honor, except for a couple that I've heard of in the last, out of you in just the last few minutes. But it did not pass down to the regular soldier as a group, yeah. As you were mentioning, the thing that happened with Job. And why do you think that was? Because the officers, was it because of their military training, their presence, or whatever? And I'm going to let you think about it for a minute while we take a break. And we'll be right back with Greg Tucker.
So, what if you're walking out to your car after work and it's been mashed by a runaway garbage truck? We've got an agent for that. Having your own State Farm agent means having a real person there to help you when things go wrong. So when accidents happen, you've got someone you know who will be there when you need them. I'm Jeannie Allman, and I'm that State Farm agent.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm agent Jeannie Allman at 896-2013.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing, and our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the DoubleTree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We're looking for the right insurance company for our auto, home, and life.
We went with Claiborne & Taylor. They've been around for years. Claiborne & Taylor. They used to be Farmer Brothers Insurance and Murfreesboro Insurance Agency. They're one of Murfreesboro's largest locally owned independent agencies.
I'm Doran Claiborne.
And I'm Gary Taylor.
Farmer Brothers Insurance and Murfreesboro Insurance Agency are now Claiborne & Taylor Insurance. Our office is at 319 West McKnight Drive, just off Memorial Boulevard behind Tire World.
You can depend on Claiborne & Taylor.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
All right, welcome back with Greg Tucker. Have you had time to think about that?
Well, an observation. There were a number of leaders on both sides who were professional military men. Mm-hmm. We know Robert E. Lee resigned from the U.S. Army mm-hmm. and declined Lincoln's request
right.
In order to be part of Virginia and the resistance. And an example, although a good positive example, but an example, William Ledbetter, who led the contingent, the Company I, 1st Tennessee, from mm-hmm. Murfreesboro, called the Rutherford Rifles, he was elected. And that was frequently the procedure, that when the group, almost always local, mm-hmm. you know, they knew each other, first formed, they would elect their captain. They would elect their leadership. So these people were frequently not experienced, as we think, you know, your commanders in combat, but they're the ones in whom the boys had the most confidence, the most mm-hmm. appreciation. Maybe they considered, you know, whether or not they had experience, but many of them didn't. And the others, beyond that, and even if we go back to the Revolutionary War, it's even more obvious, the state. And remember, even in the Civil War, we had the Indiana Regulars, the Indiana mm-hmm. Volunteers, the Tennessee. The state militias were formed and sent into the battle. Frequently, the leadership was political.
Wow.
An excellent example is Griffith Rutherford, for mm-hmm. whom the county's named. He was a politician. And when they formed the militia, rounded up the militia during that revolutionary period, the governor of the colony appointed him to be the commander of the group. Mm-hmm. No military experience of any consequence. So the leaders were not always, how would you say, qualified for the role.
Yeah.
And I think that probably had some effect on what we were talking about earlier.
Now, we were going to talk about your dad today. And we always get off. So the next time you're on, we're going to talk about your dad.
All right.
And we will talk some about his squadron.
And I will, as we talked about a little bit off record, indicate a connection with the story we just heard about Sam Davis and Job, mm-hmm. DeWitt and Job.
Oh, we're going to have a connection?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that, but let's start with your dad. Because if we don't, we'll never get back to him.
Well, that's what I say, the black sheep and the connection with the Davis story.
Yeah, okay. All right. And we will see you guys in the morning at 9 o'clock.
We're your local sports connection. Brian Barrett and John Dinkins take you to the game on WGNS AM, FM, online.